Hello and welcome to yet another podcast from the Geek Show Podcast Network. And this one, I hear you cry, is all about video games and the games that are made from videos, which is an actual thing now because there was that game last year, which is a recall back to the 1980s with those live action videotapes and the gameplay that it contained. But anyway, I am rambling. I shall cut this short. I'm Rob, and today there's also Andy and the other Rob. So say hello, you guys.
Hello.
Hello, you guys.
Oh, that had to be one.
So it's a video game show. Do we actually have a name for this mysterious show that we suddenly came up with?
It's called Press X because it's clever, the name of that, right? Because all the formats have an X on them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't know about the Switch. I've not seen that actually in person yet.
Oh, that's got an X on it. Oh, Nintendo. Okay. So yeah, technically it does. Unless you're counting the GameCube, I don't think that did, but that's another story.
That controller was just a monstrosity, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Like, people who loved it say it was really nice, it fit your hand perfectly, it was so ergonomic, but it just looked like it fell from, like, Cthulhu's backside or something. It was a messy beast. But anyway, we got games to talk about, games that we've been playing recently.
Yes.
And, yeah, so there's, like, a nice big cross-section here. There's some Japanese stuff, there's some indie stuff. Mostly it's Japanese, let's be fair. And
there's a little bit
of sci-fi to end the show on.
No. It's mainly sci-fi today.
Oh, so it's sci-fi day, is it?
Yes, it's mainly sci-fi day.
Oh, well, that'll be interesting. But without any further ado, we'll kick off with something which isn't that, really. But then again, I don't know what I'm talking about. I think I'll pass it over to somebody who does know what they're talking about. Otherwise, I'll embarrass myself and just, move on.
Well, this has a very sci-fi theme. Well, in a way, we're going from starting a sci-fi specific show with a game set in the time where sci-fi was pretty much the most popular it's ever been. And the game I'm playing, well, I'm talking about today, is This Is the Place.
That sounds very sort of fascist state, that title. I'm probably reading something that's not there, to be honest, though.
Well, the game, it's set in the late 1980s. Where you basically, as the title suggests, you're the police. You're a close to, retirement age police officer called Jack Boyd. He's in his 60s and he's just been told that in 180 days, he has to, forcefully be retired. So this game chronicles the 180 days managing the police force and the daily decisions that you'll have to make. And the basic style of the gameplay is you get a little map of the city and you have to choose, for example, who your squad is, what squad you want to take to for the day, for what shift, and how many and who to send in the emergencies that you get.
But that sounds really interesting. There's two questions here. Which is one question, basically. But that sounds like both a strategy title and a city management title.
It's bizarre. One is you've got your basic management side to it, where you are managing the police force. You get the hire and you get the fire. You get to cope with random events that happen. And for example, if any of them get shot while they're at work and die, you have to rehire them. Which is very worrying because you instantly rehire someone and then you have to worry about the funeral a week later.
That makes no sense. Are you hiring zombies?
It does have a story to it. It has basically a story. In between the days, you have interactive elements, for example, press conferences. You get voice acting stories in between. So there is a general story that flows all the way through.
Hmm.
But the main thing which, once I figured out who the voice was, I couldn't get out of my head. The voice of Jack Boyd is none other than John St. John, who is the voice actor behind Duke Nukem. So when he's doing his voiceover in the cutscenes in between the days, I just can't get Duke Nukem out of my head.
You've put an image in my head there now, Andy. You've made me think of the next Duke Nukem game is going to be Duke Nukem going to get his pension. And he makes all these sexual slurs to ladies, but the ladies don't have anything to do with it, and they just slap him and beat him up because, you know, he's an old, he's a dirty old man. Because that's what Duke Nukem was.
Hang on, are you saying Duke Nukem is Sid James?
Yes. Basically.
Hang on, is this Sid Nukem?
Sid Nukem from Carry On whatever, I don't know what it'd be.
Carry On Nukem.
Carry On Sexual Harassment. But that was basically all of them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It Anyhow, was. This is the police.
Anyway. Anyway, moving on to... we'll get the main story bit out the way, but while you're playing, the management and the story sort of link into each other. You get, for example, let's say an hour in, the mafia start getting involved in the story, and you basically have to decide whether to work with them or whether to go against them. And, for example, you might get a message saying, we're planning something at 11 p.m. We don't want any police there. So you can either come and stop us or we'll give you 20 grand if you don't come.
Oh, so you can actually be like a corrupt police commissioner, basically.
Apparently these choices, because there is a lot of... It's very complex with what happens in the game. You can even go to them and ask to kill any of your officers that are suspecting anything of you. So it does get quite very sinister.
So if it was like XCOM, where you always have that one guy in your squad who thinks he's a big shot.
Yeah.
And then he gets really, really good, and then he's a big shot on one mission too often, and he ends up getting himself killed.
Mm.
In This Is the Police, you can completely subvert that by thinking, this guy, I don't like what he's doing, so I'm going to go and get him killed by the mafia.
Yeah, you can set up a fake, like a fake crime. You pay the mafia, and you put up to 4 police officers that you just want to be killed. But the only thing is, they charge you $200 for it.
That's pretty low for what it is.
Oh, I think it's $100 if you want to kill a detective, because you can send detectives onto cases as well. You get, for example, murder cases come through, and that's another gameplay element.
That's like really cheap.
It's like, we'll give you 10 grand not to come to this, but if you give us 100 grand, we'll kill one of your detectives.
Ah, dear me.
who says human life isn't worth anything?
Well, this game, apparently.
But overall, I think it's a brilliant, it's a really unique game. I mean, the dilemma that you get, for example, if you know, let's just say there's somebody robbing a bank and they're fully armed and you've got like 5 police officers that day, you do have an option of a SWAT team as well. But if, for example, one's going to take longer than the other and you send 4 to that, then all of a sudden there's another robbery at the other side of town and you've got this one work experience lad. do you send him? You know, it goes in star ratings. And for example, you might have somebody in a 400 and odd rating, and this one that you've got left has got 5. Do you send him on to stop an armed robbery, or do you just leave it?
That might be the making of him.
March to your death.
I mean, maybe the maiming of him as well.
Well, you know, Rambo, he was a work experience kid one day. And this kid might be Rambo. You never know.
He might not.
It's more likely not.
I do recommend it. And so that is This Is the Police. And that is $13.99 currently on Steam. So for the game itself, it's quite a cheap price. Fully recommended.
Yeah. Excellent. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
It made me think of sort of Fame Hospital, though, let's be honest.
Well, It made me think of that, but it also made me think of, you know, that Rockstar game, LA, whatever it is? LA Confidential is a movie. You know that Rockstar one about the police?
Yeah, LA Noir.
LA Noir, that's it.
Oh.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, the one where it had, like, really detailed heads on stick bodies.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, the map itself, it's not, for example, fully interactive. You don't see much. You literally just click. It's more of a text-ish with a bit of illustrations.
Yeah, but the weird thing is, the way you've described it, it seems a lot more immersive than L.A. Noir was. And L.A. Noir had all the technology thrown at it.
It was, though. It was like super high. It was super high tech with the facial animation, but the bodies were like bodies of PlayStation 1 characters.
So yeah,
it was a really ridiculous image.
Not only that, I mean, I found it really difficult to get into L.A. Noir in the first place. I just didn't think the story was worth anything. But This Is the Police just seems like my kind of the kind of experience I wanted from L.A. Noir, just wrapped up in a much smaller package.
To put it another way, it kind of feels like sort of a tabletop game, you know?
Yeah.
This is definitely something you could have on your iPad. I'm sure of it.
I imagine that sort of cross-platform thing has been happening a lot.
Yeah.
iPad, Android tablet, and Steam. That has become quite common, so I imagine we will see some phase.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you mentioned tabletop games as well, because I've got a tabletop game, or not, so to speak.
Well, they're all tabletop technically, because you got to put the console on the PC somewhere.
Yeah. No, I've got Torment Tides of Numenera. Now, bit of background to this one before I jump into this, right? Torment Tides of Numenera is kind of a spiritual successor to an old 1999 RPG called Planescape Torment.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Which in itself, and in turn, was a video game adaptation of an earlier expansion to Advanced Dungeons & Dragons called Planescape, right? Now, the original Planescape was created by David Zeb Cook, and he had this idea, because Dungeons & Dragons at that point had different planes of existence, and he had this idea of using these different planes of existence and connecting them somehow, and basically allowing this sprawling kind of universal campaign instead of just on one world going across multiple worlds, right?
It sounds kind of messy.
It was, but it was also really popular because people could have campaigns that ran for years. You know, they could really kind of become absorbed in this, in what was now an actual operating universe with means modes of travel between one world to another, right? And Planescape effectively was a multiverse, sorry, not a universe. Different planes of existence, not different planets, I should say.
That makes it even more confusing, to be fair.
Basically, it's like moving through dimensions. You know, like sliders.
Well, all the Marvel Universe every few months.
Yeah, that's why they reboot. But yeah.
All the time.
Planescape Torment was an isometric RPG, and one of the things about it was that the RPG took place in different planes of existence, and it had different creatures that you had to fight against and various things like that. And it was a hugely popular game. I mean, ridiculously popular. In 1999, it was, in 1999, it was hailed as one of the games of the year. And even now, it is still considered one of the best RPGs ever made.
Well, the name rang a bell with me, and I didn't particularly play a lot of RPGs for a long time outside of the Japanese stuff, so for that,
Well, you know, some of the best RPGs include stuff like Baldur's Gate and that sort of thing, yeah?
Well, from the outside at least, they're much of a muchness. If you don't like them, it's very hard to get into them.
Yeah. Stuff like Diablo, Baldur's Gate, that sort of thing, they're all considered the best RPGs, but Planescape Torment took everything and gave it a little bit of a twist. It was weird and strange and odd, and it had these really odd philosophical ideas included as part of the game, and it made people think a lot more than a normal RPG did, and that's why it's resonated with people. And Torment, Tides of Numenera, is basically the spiritual successor to all of that. And before you ask, yes, it is weird, yes, it is strange, and yes, In Exile, the developers have taken a completely left-field approach to your standard RPG and done something strange and wonderful with it.
Okay.
Right. Tides of Numenera takes place on Numenera, which is basically, it's basically planet Earth, right? But it's planet Earth, and it's set in the distant, distant future. And the current residents of planet Earth call it the Ninth World. And the reason they call it the Ninth World is because they believe that there have been 8 great ages that existed before, and they were destroyed or disappeared. Now, the actual storyline for this, actually says there was the rise and fall of countless civilizations that have left Earth in roughly a medieval state. You start off the game, you wake up, and you've got no memories, you don't know who you are, you don't know where you are, you don't know what the hell's going on. All you know is that there's something not right. That's it. And there is there's a voice trying to help you, get out of this place, but you don't know where this place is. Everything is dark, everything is strange, and so you have to solve these little puzzles. Now, the whole world is isometric. It's an isometric RPG, and you basically have this voice guiding you initially, and it teaches you how to play the game. But you also have this very, very odd character creator. Now, the character creation bit involves a lot of dialogue choices, right? Because the key thing about Tides of Numenera is that it's basically playing a fantasy novel. You have so much dialogue, so much text to read, so much of everything to read. There is a lot of reading. If you don't like reading, this is not the game for you. If you like reading, this is a game for you.
I don't play games to read.
Yeah, a lot of people have that attitude. But you know what? When they played this game, they got absorbed in it in a way that they haven't in other games. And this is why I say this is a strange and wonderful game.
Well, on that point, I think the only way you can sort of frame that is you get out what you put in. If you play games to wind down after work, which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
A lot of people do. This is basically going to feel like work.
No, it doesn't.
Is it not?
No, that's why I said it. That's why I keep coming back to the strange and wonderful part, right? At no point, except for combat itself, did this feel like work. Not at all. When I was playing this, my only thought was, I want to know what happens next. I want to know what happens next, because your character is called The Last Castoff, right? And your character is basically, there is a being, a humanoid being, who has come up with a way of achieving a kind of immortality in the way that the Emperor does in Star Wars. He basically transfers his soul to a clone body. This guy is called the Changing God, and he has attracted the he's basically figured out a way of this kind of immortality, but the bodies he doesn't use, he basically throws away and makes a new set of bodies. But because of what he's doing, he's attracted the enmity of this thing called the Sorrow, which is actually called the Angel of Entropy, but they changed the name to the Sorrow because they didn't want to get in trouble with any religions by calling it the Angel of Entropy.
What do you think of all this, Andy?
Well, I think as with Rob's, ever so increasing reviews of RPGs, a lot of the stories just scramble my brain.
This one scrambled my brain as well initially. Right, I'll tell you something. The story for this scrambled my brain initially because I had no clue what was going on, right? And when it went through the character creator, I still had no clue what was going on. I was just trying to figure out, because the character creator involves you falling out of something that has exploded and you're basically free falling through the sky and you have to make choices. And I was going, examine my body. What's this? Do this, do this, do this. And those choices define how your dialogue choices will go and how the story will progress throughout the entire game, right?
Was this sort of a 19th century Fate version of Tom Petty's Free Fall and playing while you were doing that?
No, but I wish there was. So anyway, you are the last cast-off. You are basically one of the last of the clones of the Changing God, and you want to know what the hell is going on. So you have to now explore the world of Numenera, trying to find other clones like yourself, other cast-offs of the Changing God, trying to put the story together, because you're being chased now by the Sorrow that wants to kill you. And one of the things I love about this is that this game isn't about saving the world. It's just about saving yourself, right? You're being chased by an entity that you can't even fathom. You don't know why it's chasing you. You have to try and figure that out as you're going along. And also, along the way, you'll make friends, you'll make enemies. But who's an enemy and who's a friend depends on what choices you make. And that's, again, a strange and wonderful thing in this game, because you might make the wrong choice and somebody who could potentially be a friend turns into an enemy and wants to kill you.
Well, that's why I loved The Witcher so much.
Yeah. This is basically, I'll tell you something. If you don't mind reading, right, then this is an ideal replacement for The Witcher.
Mm.
Right? Except for combat. Now, I played the PS4 version of this. I can tell you what they've done. They've taken mouse and keyboard controls and mapped them onto the PS4 controller, which is okay to a degree, but it's still better to play this with a mouse and keyboard, right? There are a lot of things that are more intuitive because it's an isometric game. They haven't really put a lot of thought into kind of tweaking the controls for a PS4. You know, they've just mapped them and done a quick kind of quick repair job on the controls to make sure that they work and everything like that. But it's still a bit shonky to try and control combat, right? Combat is turn-based as well. So it's not like Diablo or something like that where you basically hit each other with sticks until one of you dies.
And do you not have the fart trousers of like massive power?
Oh, God, no, you don't have those. But what you do have, though, is, you know, what you do have is, because it's a turn-based system, it's very tactical as well. You know, so there is that element of strategy in the combat, and I like that element of strategy, but I just don't like the way the controls work. I would much prefer to use a mouse and keyboard for this. But that's about it with regards to the combat. In terms of the graphics, this is really good looking for an isometric RPG. It's got some Geiger-esque, some Geiger-esque environments, some, you know, sci-fi environments. It's got a city made of meat.
Is that where Lady Gaga comes from?
Possibly, I don't know. You know, it's got loads and loads of different environments, and all of them are beautiful and really, really well rendered. You know, really detailed. And you're always picking out little bits. You're like, oh, I never noticed that before. And it's essentially a point and click adventure in a sense, because even though your character can move, he has to move to various things and basically interact with them, which is at its core a point and click, right? But the beauty of this game is still the story, the narrative, the dialogue, and the amount of work that In Exile and everyone else who worked on this game have put in. They've basically taken a distant future sci-fi fantasy novel and turned it into a game in a way that I never thought anyone would do. You know, it's basically, if you like science fantasy, sci-fi fantasy, whatever, if you like those books, then you play this game. It's that simple. If you like your hit each other with sticks until one of you die, this might not be the game for you.
Well, on that, I don't think it's actually, I don't want to be reductive or anything, but it doesn't feel like the sort of thing that really should be on a console.
I don't think, well, the thing is, if you can use a mouse and keyboard on a PS4, then it's fine.
I don't believe you can. I think it's like a add-on you put on the top of the controller. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just not the same.
The thing is, if you could
It's when you're talking about sort of RPGs on consoles that are a bit more frenetic, a bit more energetic, faster paced generally. Yeah. But when you talk about RPGs on the PC, they're much more sedate in pace and they're more considered.
Well, this can be frenetic in pace at times, but a lot of the beauty of Torment, Tides of Numenera is in the slow pace. It's in the details. It's in talking to people, interacting with people, exploring the various environments and the various towns and cities that you go to. And actually, you remember those old Choose Your Own Adventure books from when we were kids?
Oh, when you were kids, but yeah.
They were around when you were a kid as well, Rob.
We had second-hand shops, so yeah, they did have them in there.
Well, right, imagine somebody made the most amazing Choose Your Own Adventure book and then turned that into a video game where every
It's called Telltale.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. Imagine Telltale did a science fantasy game that was dark and interesting and fascinating and weird and strange and wasn't Tales of Borderlands.
Guardians of the Galaxy, which they're doing as well.
Galaxy, yeah. And it was a little bit cyberpunk, it was a little bit horror, it was a little bit kind of Lord of the Rings fantasy. It had all these different elements blended into it, but blended in really, really well. So everything fit. It's like this, the most magnificent adventure, or jigsaw puzzle adventure that you've ever seen.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, what I'm saying isn't a criticism of it either. It's just, it's market, it's audience. Its audience isn't really the console gamer.
It's That's all I'm saying. Well, I'd say that its audience isn't gamers, per se.
Oh, you go as far as that? Okay.
I'd say that this, the audience with Torment Tides of Numenera is not people who play games like, you know, who basically turn to RPGs, but when they go to RPGs, they'll go for something with a lot more action and a lot less story, even though RPGs by their nature are story-driven.
So would you say this audience is more for the same audience that would go for, let's say, a Telltale game even, where it's more story than your pressy-button, shooty-shooty RPG?
I'll be honest, I'm going to be a little bit pretentious in how I'm going to conclude this, right? Torment Tides of Numenera is basically like wine, right? You have your cheap plonk that people buy from the supermarket and everyone guzzles down and gets wasted, yeah? Then you have your mid-range stuff, dinner parties, various things like that. Those are kind of the RPGs that a lot of people play. Then you have your higher-end wines, which is like The Witcher 3 and stuff like that, right? Well, maybe not The Witcher 3, but Skyrim, that sort of thing, yeah? And then you have your really, really, really expensive and rare wines. These are like masterpiece wines. These are things that only the people who actually understand wine completely should have the privilege to taste. So stuff like The Witcher 3, which generally went on sale, but a lot of people didn't understand the true magnificence of that game, right? People in the know actually got it. They realized exactly what CD Projekt Red had done, right? This is kind of the same.
Very high plaudits there.
Yeah.
So I think I'll take that as a jumping off point. And also, you know, it's another RPG, so that does help. But it is Tales of Berseria, which is the latest in the incredibly long-running Tales series. It dates back to, I don't know, I'm not overly versed in the franchise, I'll be perfectly frank.
Yeah.
But this one was released a little while ago. yes, the story, for what it's worth, I don't know where this follows on from, but I have it on some authority that it does like feed into like other parts of the franchise and other stories within the franchise, and it's a prequel to those in some manner of speaking. But it does function somewhat on its own. But you play a character called Velvet. As the game starts, you're in this very small village. Life seems fine. You got a younger brother who seems to have like an illness, like affects his ability to move about and be active. And you have like an older stepbrother who is married to your sister, but the sister's dead. And you know, life's fine. She goes about her business. She's learning how to defend herself, but not all is fine at all. You know, it's an RPG. It's fantasy. Wrong in this galaxy for, you know,
yeah.
There's to be some sort of threat happening there. But that threat comes in the shape of monsters or demons. And, well, demons, spelt with A-E. And as events start happening around the village, basically what happens is the hole at the end of the village, which a lot of this stuff is coming from, goes a bit batty. And your brother goes missing. This is a big detail. It's not a plot spoiler because it's basically happens in the first hour of like a fairly substantial JRPG. But essentially, your velvet stepbrother, sacrifices her younger brother to close this like demon gate. Absolutely, you know, kills him, sacrifices him, all sorts. And in trying to stop this, Velvet is dragged into this hole as sort of all manner of hell is going on. She emerges from it with basically like a demon arm, and she's incredibly angry. And once upon a time, where she couldn't touch any of the demons that had some sort of protective spell on them that protected them from just sort of normal martial arts or whatnot. Now she's able to destroy and dispatch quite easily. So that happens. She's beaten quite, you know, easily by the stepbrother, who was like a head exorcist in the military. And she gets sent to prison for a very, very long time. I can't remember the exact precise amount of time she's gone for.
Wasn't it like 10 or 15 years or something like that?
I think it's not that long. I think a few years, just leave it as a few years. But she emerges from that, and she's incredibly angry because her stepbrother betrayed her, killed her brother, and took everything away from him. Took everything away from Velvet. And what happens there is it's basically a revenge tale. You do meet other people along the way. You have the kind of cocky samurai who's also part demon. And you have a witch sort of in the... I don't know what the term is in sort of anime circles. The sort of look like a young girl but quite brassy like an older woman and quite aggressive.
What? Look like a young girl but...
Well, it doesn't matter. I'm just confusing things by invoking that. But yeah, she's quite an annoying character, the witch. But yeah, that is the setup. You meet all sorts of people. There's like the exorcists have a complete stranglehold over the world. You meet monsters who aren't just monsters. They're actually people who have been turned into monsters. That's the start of the thing that's happened there. In that way, it's a lot like, what was that game called? This Square put out a little while ago.
Final Fantasy?
No, the other one. It's not like Final Fantasy. It was kind of like PS or SNES era.
Like SNES era? Setsuna.
Eh?
I Am Setsuna.
Yeah, yeah, it was like I Am Setsuna. It has that sort of same idea of the world and what's going on in it there, I think. So, yeah, it's fine. I mean, visually, I don't think there's much in the terms of innovation happening with the people who make the Setsuna game. No, the Tales games. I know it's Bandai Namco who produce, put them out, publish them. They do both, actually, sorry. The developer and publisher. But, yeah, I don't think there's been an awful lot of sort of... evolution of what the Tales franchise are, because basically all the games fundamentally look the same. Like graphically, the way it runs, what the characters look like, it's all much of a muchness. I mean, it's defense of that. It's also trying to look like an anime.
Well, I think and that's just I think the it style. Does. I think that's just the style.
Yeah, and upset annoys me about that is this one kind of invokes some of the more leery aspects of modern anime. Because as you escape prison, she's basically wearing the same clothes all the time and they kind of fall away and she's attacked by monsters all the time and she fights the monsters. And what's basically left is like clothes hanging off an awful lot of cleavage. You get a bit of butt in there as well. And when she gets like proper clothes, it's supposed to be armor. It's exactly the same as well. It's a very revealing outfit.
That's not just anime, though.
I know it's not, but I just don't like it generally because, you know, especially when you're spending so long with a character and...
Yeah, you know. I know. I'm just saying that that was in Skyrim. That was in that's been in all sorts of fantasy games in from the West. It's not just an anime thing, all right?
I know, but they're more prominent with it, the animes.
Well, no, Western RPGs are the ones who actually brought it about in the first place.
Okay. Well, I'm wrong there, clearly. Yeah, but some of the characters are interesting. I mean, the samurai, I like it. I think his name was Yojimbo, if I remember correctly. But, I tried the Japanese and the American dub. The Japanese has, like, really colourful sort of characterisation through the voice acting, and you get a real sense of who each person are. I mean, admittedly, Velvet is very, gotta kill them all. You're gonna die. I'm gonna kill you all. Oh, you're dead. I'm going to kill you all. What am I going to do now? So she's quite monotone of the character. But I think she's sort of made a bit more livable, a bit more relatable by having these supporting characters. But when you play the English dub, it's just various degrees of generic like performance from voice actors who you've heard hundreds upon hundreds of times before. And the character of the samurai, he basically does a 180 as to who he is, because in the Japanese dub, he's kind of playful and sarcastic. But in the American dub, he's sort of hero-y hero, McHeroson. And it's like a 180 of who that is completely, and I don't like it when that's done. It's kind of cheap, if I'll be honest.
Yeah, I don't like that either, when they just destroy a character just to fit a particular mould that they have of it.
Hmm. But, how it plays, I guess you could relate it to sort of Kingdom Hearts. And a little bit of sort of combat games, like fighting games. Because each button on the PS4, like triangle, square, circle, X, each of them respond to like a movement like a slice of the sword or whatever. Yeah. So you can like set up combos and there's like other things you can do. You can get souls and have like ultimate moves, finishes that help a great deal when you're fighting bosses. So it's quite reductive and quite simple. It's sort of the open world. I don't know if open world is the right word. So you got like a little circle where all the action takes place in.
Yeah.
And you've got control of how you move around that circle. And you've got little time bars. Well, not time bars, sort of energy bars. So you do like a combo and that energy bar is like depleted. So you've got to sort of just run away until it's full again. I did anyway, but I'm just generally bad at this sort of thing. But there's a degree in there, and you meet all sorts of different characters who can change your strategy completely. Like, there's one character who you meet like about 5 hours into the game, who's basically a fallen angel. Because like, there's that aspect to it, where angels are things in this world. But they're so susceptible to magic that people have been using them as slaves for generations. Which is quite dark, actually, now I say it out loud.
Yeah.
But yeah, you meet all sorts of people and all sorts of aspects which show how, in keeping the peace in the planet, the exorcists have actually become quite evil characters and evil people.
Does sound very sinister, this game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It for people who like Tales, I don't know how it figures in the sort of the hierarchy of whether it's like one of the better or one of the worse. But to its defense, whether it is best, like one of the good ones or bad ones, I believe it's one of the more accessible ones because it doesn't need that prerequisite knowledge of like the 6 games that preceded it and the one that follows it. So I know exactly what's going on here. It's just basically, that's a revenge story. It's quite crude in a lot of ways, but it sets out to do exactly what achieves to do exactly what it sets out to do, you know. And, you know, there's not enough of that. I mean, yeah, it has its problems. Yeah, it looks like a PlayStation 2 game, like all of these Tales of Berseria games, But it plays well. It's memorable. The characters are fun enough to spend time with if you keep to the Japanese dub. And, you know, there's not really much I can complain about, even if it didn't set the world on fire for me.
Okay. Well, it sounds pretty straightforward. I mean, Berseria is kind of the prequel to Zestiria, isn't it?
Again, first one I've played. Don't know.
No, I know that Berseria is the prequel to Zestiria, and I know that if you wanted to understand Zestiria fully, you need to play Berseria, but also if you want to understand Berseria fully, you need to play Zestiria afterwards to see what happened after the finale of Berseria.
I've got the character names anyway. It was Velvet Crow.
Yeah.
And in the English dub, she was played by Christina V.
Yeah. Who's pretty good normally.
Laffy Set is the younger brother. Rakuro Rangetsu, who in the American dub is played by Benjamin Diskin.
Okay.
And yeah, they're the main characters. And the witch I was talking about is called Magilu or Magilu.
Mm.
Yeah, and just as a description, a mysterious and carefree sorceress. That's it. I won't go in anymore because it's basically getting into plot spoilers. But yeah, it does exactly what it sets out to. So, you know, how much you get from it depends on how invested you are in the franchise.
Okay, cool. You know, when you're moving around, does it do those little incidental bits of dialogue still?
Yeah. I mean, I like them. There was not so much moving around, but like in Disgaea,
yeah. It
had like a little thing pop in the corner. So if you go to that character, you have like this little skit.
Yeah.
It still has that. It has that in here, in Tales of Berseria. And the stuff with what was he called? Rangetsu was great because he's basically an idiot who only thinks about food and drink. And so, you know, it's fun.
Yeah. See, I always like
to spend time with.
Yeah, I always like those bits of the Tales games because they added more depth to the world. They gave the world more context, and you had more of a sense of how things were working or your place in the world while you were playing the game.
Yeah, that's definitely there. It's one of the more enjoyable parts of it, I'll be honest.
Okay, cool. So, is it back to me again?
Keeping it in Japan, yes.
Actually, we're not keeping it in Japan.
Well, origin stories and where it was built.
Yeah, but we're not keeping it in Japan. See, the setting is kind of medieval Europe.
One's cute and sort of light, even though it has darkness, and one just has no pretense of being anything other than absolute horror and darkness. No,
Berseria is quite dark. I mean, it is a revenge story.
Oh, no, but it's compared to what you're talking about, it's like, you know.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I'm trying to say. Berseria is a revenge story, and the irony is that Berserk is also a revenge story. Because that's right, yep, I have Berserk and the Band of the Hawk, or as I just call it, Berserk, because Who needs that stupid "and the band of the hawk" extra bit on the title? It's Berserk. We all know it's Berserk.
Subtitle makes subtitle listen.
Yeah, exactly. It's developed by Omega Force, published by Koei Tecmo, and it's based on the world created by Kentaro Miura in his Berserk manga. Obviously, there has been an anime adaptation. The Blu-ray of the original anime adaptation was released not long ago, or re-released not long ago by MVM. So if you got the cash, go out and get it. It's worth it. They've done three movies recently called The Golden Age Arc, three anime movies. And
it's super violent.
It is super violent. And they've also got a new series, which is which I think the first half was showing recently and just finished. Now, Berserk and the Band of the Hawk is a Musou-style game, but if ever there was a manga title...
If you have not known that word, though, that is Dynasty Warriors, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Dynasty Warriors, Samurai Warriors, that sort of thing. Musou just means warriors, right? It's a warriors-type game. So it's basically one versus a thousand, right? Now, if ever there was a manga or anime property that deserved to be a Musou-type game, it's Berserk, right? Berserk fits this game type, this gaming genre, in a way that just about no other franchise could. And I've played, you know, Dynasty Warriors Gundam games. I've played Dynasty Warriors. I've played Samurai Warriors. And I've played, you know, One Piece Pirate Warriors and you know, all these other Warriors-based games. You know, Dragon Quest Heroes is the same sort of game. But Dragon Quest Heroes works to a degree. But we'll get to that. You know, when we cover Dragon Quest Heroes 2, Berserk beats all of those because the setting is literally a mercenary fighting in a war and repeatedly moving from one war to another. So at no point does the character feel out of place, but the general tone of it is basically it's kind of a medieval time. You have people in armor on horseback going from one place to another. Mercenary troops are the order of the day. They help these lords fight their wars, everything like that. And you are introduced to the character of Guts. Now, the first part of the very first bit of the game is basically what happens much later on. It gives you an idea of what happens much later on, but it's actually just a dream that Guts has had before he fights in his first mission, which is basically conquering a castle on behalf of a lord. And you play the young Guts, helmet, sword, but it's not the black sword, right?
The sword there is referring to is basically the one that's the length of your body, basically.
Well, this
big
sword...
Big slab of steel.
Yeah, this sword is basically... It's a big sword, and he wields it with one hand, but it's not the black sword. So, Guts fights in this war, and you take control of Guts, and you basically have to do the typical Dynasty Warriors thing, control the areas, right? And move from one area to another, completing the objectives until you basically completed the mission in its entirety. And success, you've leveled up, you've done all your bits, everything like that. But then it goes to a cutscene, and the story moves on. And you're effectively playing through the Golden Age arc story in brief and in a video game. But it's so fitting with a Dynasty Warriors-style game. It just works. Because a lot of the action in Berserk is basically Guts and the rest of the characters in combat of some sort. So you taking on that role and being in combat in between these bits of storytelling, it works so well, you know? And that is something that I didn't expect was how much and how well this whole package fits together. It's probably one of the most satisfying Warriors-style games that I've played in recent years. It has the option to turn the blood and gore off. Well, the gore anyway. You can't.
Why would you do that? That's kind of what Berserk is.
I know. But the thing is, there's something eminently satisfying about running around with a big sword smashing people, right? There's something eminently satisfying about doing that in a video game.
Can I just say that I think the blood and gore is essential because when you're talking about the other games,
yeah,
it's just the going around beating people up with swords, with maces, with axes and all sorts.
Yeah.
And all you get is sort of like, well, no real anything.
Yep.
I mean, I don't want any on the games to have gore, but they may as well have been slapped with like a foam finger.
Yeah.
You know, a sword or an axe, because there's no real consequence to the violence, but yeah.
This is true. Although that's a very odd way of challenging someone to a duel, slapping them with a foam finger. I never
saw
those
ones you get at sports events.
Yeah, I never saw that in Pride and Prejudice. I challenge you to a duel. Jeeves, bring me my foam hand.
It was never the foam finger in the stone, was it?
That just sounds wrong. The foam finger in the stone. So anyway.
I had another one there, but
yeah. Back to Berserk and the Band of the Hawk, right? You, as you progress through the story, you'll get other characters. So you'll get Griffith, who is Guts' best friend and the leader of the Band of the Hawk. You'll get Casca, you'll get all the other characters from the Band of the Hawk, and a few extras that are kind of unexpected, but welcome. And you'll play through all of the story scenarios, and you'll basically carry on. It's got several game modes, which are interesting. One of them is kind of a free mode where you can go from one mission to another and basically just play through the missions separately. And so, on that front, it's very much a typical Dynasty Warriors game. What I would suggest with this is play the story mode and just enjoy the story mode, right? Play through the missions, enjoy the story. Berserk is a really good manga. It's a really good story, full stop. And so having the opportunity of fighting Guts' battles, taking on the character of Butts, taking on the character of Butts, eh? Taking on the character of Guts. I'm just remembering, you remember the old Dreamcast game, Sword of the Berserk, Guts Rage?
Yeah. Yes, I am now.
Sword of the Berserk, Butts Rage is a totally different game.
Oh, dear me.
Sorry, I'm just highly amused myself with that.
Composure, Rob. Regain it. Regain your composure.
It's difficult. So anyway, Berserk and the Band of the Hawk, right? In terms of the graphics, it's really good. The environments are really well designed, really well laid out, and the characters are very good. Yes, okay, there's a lot of copy-paste with the mobs that you're fighting, but you also have soldiers on your side, and there's a lot of copy-paste on that. But then again, you know, this is war, so who really cares? They're just there to line up and let you hit them. You know, if you play this on a harder mode, then they don't just stand there and let you hit them. They actually attack and do some proper damage as well, so it becomes much trickier. But if you play it on a lower, easier mode, then they literally just stand there and let you hit them.
Yeah, with any of these things, though, you got to bear in mind that if you don't like this style of game, doesn't matter what franchise is attached to it, it's not going to change your mind.
No, it's not.
Oh, definitely.
But if you're a fan of Berserk, then this is worth playing, right? If you're a fan of the Dynasty Warriors games and can handle a bit of gore, right, this is worth playing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the same with the One Piece ones. I liked them because it was so eccentric.
Yeah.
This is so different.
It is very different. It is very different. I mean, it's got shades of the old Sword of the Berserk Guts Rage in there. It's got elements of, what was that recent one? It's got elements of Attack on Titan in there. You know, Wings of Freedom, that one, that was done by Koei Tecmo and Omega Force, I think it was as well. So it's got elements of that in terms of the environments, because it's very much a medieval European style in series of environments, castles, that sort of thing. And so it's kind of similar to Attack on Titan on that front as well. But this, I would say, is a lot more enjoyable than Attack on Titan, because it is the Dynasty Warriors formula at its purest and most violent. And there is something viscerally pleasurable about playing this game.
Yeah, I understand that.
You know how some people have that psychopathic itch that they never scratch?
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is the equivalent of that being a cat and this game rubbing its belly.
Okay. That's
but it's fine, not going to turn you into a psychopath, don't worry. The game isn't going to turn you into a psychopath. It's just, if you've had a stressful day, you know.
You'd be grinning like a psychopath while you're playing this.
Oh, yeah. But then you'll be so calm afterwards. It'll be like you've been enlightened. It'll be like you're a monk and you've entered into the state of nirvana afterwards. Yeah. Nothing will faze you after this. Trust me.
Okay.
So it's a great stress reliever.
very thematically similar, I guess. You're fighting games, very heavy action, and it's kind of relating back to the other game that I played in the fact that it's kind of messy with its sort of linearity of the story.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Nier Automata, and it's Drakengard, it's Nier, it's sixth ending, it's fifth ending, or something like that. And it's a thousand second, years in the yeah. future, so...
I was going to say it's the second ending of the third ending of the fourth game of the fifth ending.
Yeah, it's kind
I'm
of
confused
a, kind of, yeah, it's not really necessary to be honest though, because all it basically is in the year 3000 or somewhere around there.
Not much has changed, but they live underwater.
No, things have kind of gone bad.
I was going
to
say
aliens came to the world and created sentient robots who started killing people left, right, and center. There was a war. It went badly, the world was scared, and the remaining humans pegged it to the moon and sent sent hyper-engineered, really strong, really agile androids. And you play one of them, and you got back up with another one. It's 9B and 2S. You play 9B, who is the affection of millions of, well, thousands of cosplayers this early already. It by Platinum and put out by Squaresoft or Square Enix. And I want to say one thing first before I get into the meat of the game, but the score that's been done by Keiichi Okabe.
Yeah.
Maybe my favourite ever score.
Wow.
Because it's so evocative and it sets the mood for the entire piece so very, very well. And yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anything like it before in games. It's just generally outstanding. But the gameplay itself... It's kind of an overworld. It's quite big, but only because you have to basically run everywhere. There was a way where you could get on top of like the moose that sort of wander around. It's not animal that just wander around, but they do. And it makes the sort of the travel a bit more manageable. And there is like fast travel, but yeah, it's an open world, just not like what we've become used to, you know, like Witcher or that one with the dinosaurs or robots.
Horizon Zero Dawn.
So it's a manageable open world, so that's at least something. And the player's a lot like Bayonetta. I don't mean that it's got like, you know, got one blade on your hands and one on your, and you could use guns and swords. Not that. More in the fact that it's just incredibly fluid, easy, fast paced, and everything you do makes you feel like a king of the world because it's so flowing and well put together. The combos are great. It's got all sorts of different weapons. You have like your light weapon and your heavy weapon. And this little guy that like comes around here, like basically a little AI robot that floats around you, who's adorable. And you can append him with sort of attack modes. And he shoots like bullets, which is super helpful because the robots and the things you face are very varied. Some of them would just be like quite generic looking grey hunks of metal. Some of them will fly, and you make like different variations on them. There's like a village that you appear because like the robots have sort of a little society burgeoning. And I'm not going to go into the details of it, but basically one like discovers religion, and one discovers the circus.
Hang on, so this game has robot heaven?
Well, the idea, yeah.
Seriously?
So, kind of. Well, they don't have it, but they have like robots that believe in the afterlife, believe in... religion, so yeah, they have faith.
Hang on,
and that's one of the best levels of the game. But I'm not going to get stuck in it because, you know, I don't want to get stuck in one point more than any other. But like I said, it's like Bayonetta in one sense, where you have your character, you've got a support character, but ultimately it's just like a very, very fast hack and slash, like Bayonetta, like Devil May Cry, like any of these games. But I don't think those sorts of games really work nowadays. None of them have really been all that successful. They've become super, super niche, where once upon a time, like Dante, he's one of the rock stars of the whole video game format. But I don't think that's everybody else since. So they've got to maybe sort of innovate a little bit more to keep it fresh. And they do. They innovate completely in this. It's not always the camera. It's not always behind the character. It's not always behind 9S. The camera flips and changes perspective all of the time. So sometimes you're playing cameras behind you. Sometimes you're playing like a sort of Castlevania style 2D jumpy slashy slashy game.
Okay.
And other times it's sort of head on, so it's looking down like I don't know, like Contra, that sort of style.
Yeah.
And even more so, there's occasional levels where one of the bosses is one of these bosses where you think, you're just basically a country. Why do I have to fight you? You're a country with like lasers and teeth and an EMP radar. Why do we have to fight you? You're too big. You're too big.
You have to fight a country.
It's as big as a country, basically.
Not a county, a country.
Basically. Mm. He's big. He's big. I'm thinking like Wales, more than even... he's still a big lad. Still a big lad. But yeah, when you get those bosses that are massive, you can get like another version of the android, which is basically, it turns into like a Harrier jump jet. We can alternate between the jump jet thing with like machine guns and rockets and a big sort of cybernetic, maybe Gundam, maybe something like that, where you can shoot bullets and you can like whip your sword around.
Yeah.
So it's always keeping itself fresh. It never sort of sinks into convention and things. I've got to do this all through the game now and be this thing constantly. But the story itself, this is it's basically where there's contention, because this is one of these games where you play it the first time and it makes sort of an idea of sense. But what happens here, right? This is the sort of game where you've got to complete it 5 or 6 times to actually get the full picture.
Yeah.
Now, if you're talking about some games, like 20 plus hours, that's too much. That's just too much. It's too long. You got to play it too much to get the full picture, and it's just a lazy way of storytelling. But with this, I took my time, and I completed it in 12 hours.
Okay.
So, not like some people who you'll play this game, and they'll do it like 6 times in a month. That's kind of missing the point. Yeah. This is a game which is just so energetic and exciting that you want to savour it, make it last. And so far, I've got to say, I've not played an awful lot of games, so this may be slightly damning with faint praise. But at this early phase, this is my game of the year.
Fantastic.
Because, yeah, it, everything about it is basically as good as it possibly could be. Yeah, the world design's a bit limited. It's a bit colourless outside the circus, but it is the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And the world has basically ended. There's nothing left.
Yeah.
And the robot designs are quite on the nose. They're quite plain. But, again, it's all fit to purpose.
Yeah. I shall not, have to play this.
They're not evolved to like sort of super cybernetics. They evolved to just do their job, and that's it. So,
I shall have to play this.
It's very, very good. I would recommend anybody who likes them sort of games, whether it be God of War, Devil May Cry, Bayonetta, any of those. There's hundreds of them, frankly. If you like them, your new favourite game. Mm.
Cool. And I want a logic complaint. You killed my jokes. My attempts at humour fell. They failed because of you.
And the score's amazing. I can't stress that enough. The score is amazing. But what was your joke?
Well, you said they're in the year 3000, and I said not much changed, but everything's underwater. And then I was going
to
ask you...
I don't know what that's a reference to.
It's the song. Being to the year 3000, not much has changed, but they live underwater, and apparently the great-great-great-granddaughter is pretty fine. Busted.
Are you referencing Busted at me?
Yes.
And you're complaining that I'm the one who's in the wrong.
And then I was going to ask about Robot Heaven, because I was going to ask, where do all the calculators go?
Yeah, and I got that one. Crichton would be happy with, Nier Automata World.
Hey, I held back on my joke.
Which one was yours?
Fawz Foam Finger. Yeah. I was dying to say that, but I didn't.
This is Silicon Heaven is very much believed in Nierland.
Fantastic.
And I hope
calculators won't be able to go anyway.
Oh, yeah, the calculators would be fine. One thing I will say, though, such is this world that they've set up by Platinum and the guy who was frankly mad who made this world, which I will say, the guy who made this game, the Nier universe, he never really got the chance to do the game like he wanted to do the game.
Yeah.
So he had to sort of compromise greatly. Whereas this is the sort of thing that he exactly wanted to make. Let me find his name.
Yoko
Taro.
Yeah.
He is making the game that he always wanted to make.
Well,
and I just hope he gets to follow this up, because this is one of these games where you just want more. You just want more and more and more and more.
The thing is, he's not like Suda51 and Hideo Kojima, who got praised right from the beginning. Yoko Taro, Dragon Guard is one of his games, and that got universally panned. So
he didn't have the finances or the time to do what he wanted.
Exactly, and so because it got panned so badly, they basically put like a leash and blinkers on him, which I think has just had him raring to go all these years.
And it's just nice to see he's been given the chance to make the game that he wants to make.
Yeah.
And Platinum have helped him do it beautifully.
Yeah. So I think we've got one more game left, haven't we?
The final Furlong, yeah.
Yes. This the game we're moving on to, now, we are leaving Japan, but your character can be Japanese, so we're still there in a sense. But I have been playing Mass Effect Andromeda.
Ooh, okay.
How are the eyes? How are the eyes?
A lot better now there's been a patch.
good.
But I think it's quite bizarre that we've come from a game where we're talking about, for example, we've come from a game when we've been talking about L.A. Noir with the bad body animations and the excellent facial animations, to a game where at the beginning it was quite not so perfect facial animations and okay body animations. But we'll get to that eventually. But
yeah.
We'll talk about the story first, I think. Mass Effect Andromeda, it says it begins. The first opening movie is set between Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. And then following, like, a cryo... There's always a cryo sleep, isn't there, in science fiction? They wake up 634 years later. That's a good sleep. And they wake up in the Andromeda galaxy. Was that a delayed...
A delayed reaction.
I love Andy's turn of phrase.
But anyway, you wake up and your basic role is to find the new home for the human race. Well, I say the human race, but for mankind in general, to be fair, which I always think is a real hard ask, considering every single race needs a different survival. You know what I mean? But anyway, your overall role is to find this, they call them golden worlds, but new planets where civilization can basically survive. And it begins where you're with your father, who's called a Pathfinder, and you go to this planet where it looks like F2, kind of, but it's not what it seems, and all chaos ensues, and there's a crash landing, and it goes quite spiraling downhill from there. But anyway.
Okay, so it looks like
Earth 2. I don't know how far I can go without spoiling this.
What I know about Mass Effect Andromeda, you're probably not spoiling much already.
Mm. But anyway, after your father, Alec, something happens to him and you become the new Pathfinder. And you get introduced to Sam, who's the computer inside your brain. And you take the role of finding the new home. And you've got your crew back. It's not the crew from previous games. There's some references in there. But you've got your human, you've got your Turian, you've got all these different races on your ship. But yet only one that you find in the Andromeda Galaxy, which is a bit of a letdown, I think. But anyway, that's your basic storyline. You do get an evil alien, as you do in all sci-fi adventures further down. But I'll leave that plot line for when you get into the game.
Yeah.
Because with the game so huge, I want to get onto the creative and gameplay element to it.
Okay.
At the beginning, you get to choose between your standard male and female rider. That's your surname. Your original ones are Scott Ryder or Sarah Ryder.
So hang on. Let me just get this straight. So you are a Pathfinder. And your surname is Ryder, so you are Pathfinder Ryder.
Yes. And
sounds like somebody who loves like roller coasters.
I know.
You can probably have some fun by changing your first name.
Like Sean Ryder.
I was thinking Masked, but
Masked Ryder. Pathfinder Masked Ryder.
but anyway, your original names, you can stick with them. Or changing them as Scott Ryder or Sarah Ryder. Whichever one you pick, your other one is your sister or your brother in the storyline. So you get to you get to design both of them, not just the one. So that's a lot different to your old Mass Effect games.
Okay.
But I think where the game really, I'd say it really lacks, is definitely the creative element to it. Because... considering Dragon Age Inquisition had quite a in-depth creation
Yeah.
At the beginning, you could change basically anything.
Yep.
It's very stripped down, but you still got that there.
Okay.
But your RPG elements are all still there. You can research new weapons. You can buy new weapons if you're too lazy to do that. You can improve all your stats. You can, there's romance options. I have to mention those because they're very weird.
Okay, when you say very weird, we want more details, obviously.
Well, you've played the other Mass Effects, haven't you, Rob?
Yes, I have.
Both of you.
Yes.
Well, what do you think was weird about these?
Absolutely nothing in the modern age. You shouldn't judge someone based on their sexuality.
Oh, no. I'm not on about that. I'm on about more the interspecies relationships.
Absolutely nothing. If they want to be interspecies, then that is their choice as a free-thinking human being. Okay.
I was going to say the how sex with the internet like that game Fahrenheit.
No, he has a fight, not sex. Unless there's some weird thing that's going on there in that game.
No, you had a fight with the internet running along the side of a building. Yep. That's the one. Sorry.
Yeah. No, the interspecies stuff, fine. But I'm used to that because I've watched Star Trek with Captain Kirk and he got jiggy with everything. If it had a hole, he was there, right? So that's old news, right? That's old news. I mean, what was it? Star Trek had not just the first interracial kiss, but also the first interspecies kiss when Captain Kirk got jiggy with the green woman, right?
The green woman.
Yeah, that green alien woman, right? So Mass Effect having interspecies relationships, not a problem at all. Nobody should be shocked by it because Star Trek has already been there and gone completely, right? And let's not get onto Chewbacca and the Ewoks, okay? But
well,
what I want to know is it in full gory detail when these relationships happen? When relations happen, is it still in full gory detail, or have they toned it down?
They've went the total opposite direction. They've toned it down, Rob.
What they do?
They've basically went the type where you'd be blind after you watch it. They went in a total opposite direction.
What, they just have a bright light and suddenly you can't see? Are you saying they fire lasers into your eyeballs?
It feels like they fire lasers into your eyeballs.
Okay, right, okay. So,
but anyway.
Sorry, now I've just got this weird sci-fi 70s porn music playing.
That'll probably be a mod.
My name's Pathfinder Rider.
Anyway. The game itself, if you can distract yourself from that very obscure conversation there.
Yes.
But the gameplay side to it, it's very in-depth. You'll spend hours upon hours. I mean, by the time I finished the game, with still a few side missions to go,
yeah,
I was clocking in at the 49-hours mark.
Wow.
But it's like, for example, a great example is I got the guide with the game because I just like, as a companion guide, 300 of the 500 and odd pages are side quests.
Wow.
It's very in-depth. For example, you could be in the middle of one side quest and also, for example, a main mission, and then as soon as you visit the ship, one of your crew members will go, "Can you help me a minute?" And you're like, or send you an email and go, "I found something on a planet. Can we go and take a look?" But, oh, there's crumbs on the floor. There's something on the ship. And I spent 10 minutes scanning the floor for crumbs and following a crumb trail. But the world, don't worry. The world's pretty much somebody's out to destroy you. But you're trying to clear up these crumbs on the ship. But... but so, I mean, it's for even the £40 price tag on it, it's definitely worth your money. And the animations that no doubt you've all heard about, they have been fixed to a sense in the new patch, but yeah, you don't really notice them after a while.
The dialogue's also been getting a lot of flack for being, well, horrible.
Yeah, they could have...
Well, it differs. Definitely differs.
Yeah. Yeah,
the famous bit where basically someone says, stop talking now, my face is tired.
Yeah, because the face looked tired. You could actually tell the face was tired. She moves her head now, though.
Oh, right, she moves her head now. I thought that was just like the way it was animated.
Yeah. Oh, no, she actually says, my face is tired. But you can actually see that before the patch, because she just stares at you and doesn't blink. Or doesn't have any facial expression whatsoever. But you used to be able to look past that, but now she actually animates and moves and has eyelids.
Fantastic.
But yeah, I do fully recommend it. The gameplay itself, it is more to your original Mass Effect, where you're worried about visiting planets and exploring,
yeah,
rather than just going on missions and fighting.
Excellent.
And and the Mako's back. The little vehicle you have is back.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah, it doesn't... Well, is it validated actually having a fourth one?
Yes. I don't want to give too much away. I think they announced it might be a part of a new trilogy, but there's an after the credits scene in a Marvel style.
Iron Man turns up and says to Sean Ryder, we need you for the Avengers. And Sean Ryder says, I don't know, I've got to get a gig with Bez. And then...
Yeah. Can Bez be Ant-Man? No. Can Bez be Ant-Man? Because then it can be Bez-Man.
Oh, I forgot what I was going to say now.
Sorry, Andy.
What were we talking about before you said about Bez?
I forgot.
After seeing credit thing.
Yeah, after seeing credit.
Oh, yeah. So there's the after credit scene in Marvel's, like, such of the Marvel style, which does hint at a set, like, that there could be a second one.
Yeah.
Whether they make a second one, you don't know, but I take it they will do.
I didn't want them to make a first one. I thought Mass Effect had ended really well and then just leave it.
Mm. But, you know, Mass Effect 2, that was probably the greatest Mass Effect that they've ever made, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
There is an after credits scene, and it does hint quite strongly of the next, well, the main villain in the next one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, without any too much spoilers, definitely get it.
Okay.
The plot itself does wrap up, so you can just play it and there's no spoilers there.
Okay, right.
Excellent. That's a lot of games we've got through today.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Six, just to recount them. Well, this is the Police, Torment, what was it, sorry?
Torment, Tides of Numenera.
Good job we asked there, never have got that.
No, I reckon before you should move on, you should try and say it yourself.
Torment, Tales of Numeria.
Tides of Numenera.
Tales of Berseria, Berserk, Band of the Hawk, Nier Automata, and Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yes.
Big eclectic mix, lots of sci-fi. But that is all we have time for now, and we will be doing Press X a little bit more regularly going forward.
Yeah.
Whether it's a review episode of game talk like today or something completely different.
Yeah.
It just generally be a lot more common going forward.
Yeah, I agree. If you like what we do, because we like what we do, and we like talking about video games, and we like talking about video games with you people out there, then you can show your support for us by buying one of our lovely bits of merchandise or make a donation using the button on the right-hand side of our website. That's thegeekshow.co.uk, just in case you are confused as to who we are and what we're doing. You can find out more about us there. But if you want to contact us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. You can find all of our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Mixcloud, and various other places on the internet. And if you're listening through iTunes or Audioboom, then subscribe, leave us a review, leave us a rating. It does help us improve. So that's about it from us. Until the next exciting episode of Press X, I have been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I have also been Rob.
We'll see you all next time.
Thanks for listening.